Hey, Phil the Engineer here, and you're listening to the Meat Eater Podcast, part of the Meat Eater Podcast Network. We know one great podcast isn't enough, and you want more. So go check out and subscribe to these other great Meat Eater titles. In Cal's Week in Review, Ryan Callahan hits you with the latest, greatest, and sometimes weirdest stories out of the outdoors and conservation. Get your deer fix year-round on Wired to Hunt with Mark Kenyon. Ben O'Brien wades into the murky waters of ethics in the outdoors so you don't have to on The Hunting Collective. And listen to Remy Warren's detailed tips and tactics for every hunting situation and cutting the distance. You can subscribe to these podcasts anywhere podcasts are found or listen at themeateater.com.
This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Presented by OnX Hunt, creators of the most comprehensive digital mapping system for hunters. Download the Hunt app from the iTunes or Google Play Store. Know where you stand with OnX. All right, Josh Carney, the first thing we got to talk about... You're 28 years old, and yes. You're here on my birthday. Today I turned 46, and the first thing you're going to do is tell me about how I suck at turkey calling.
Oh, we're jumping right to this, then.
No, yeah, I want to just clear the air on it. Just tell me about it. Just hit me. I'm up because it's my birthday, so hit me back down again.
Man,
good formal critique. Like, what areas should I most strive to improve?
Man, I just don't want to break your heart. Like, this is the first.
No, do it. Break it up. Like if you're going to give me, just try to make it seem like you're not being mean, but like you're being helpful.
Okay. Your turkey call is not supposed to sound like a drowning duck in a pool of sewage.
Yeah. Okay. That's helpful.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm just trying to help you out. I mean, if you're going sea duck hunting, that's appropriate. But when you're turkey calling, you know, just it's cluck, cluck, purr, not.
Hit me with a beautiful turkey call.
Oh, man, here we go. It's my style.
Dude, I love it. With no assistance from calls whatsoever.
Sans call. No diaphragms, no latex involved.
No. See, turkey call company tried to, like, man, you're really good. Like, if I could sell you, I'd make a lot of money. I was like, I think that's prostitution. Human trafficking is not something I'm up for.
You know, I didn't mean to hit you with this one when you came in, but I had, I became, like, interested in you and
that
wanting to talk to you.
That sounded a little creepy.
Yeah, years ago, though.
So you're saying you should have been stalking me for a little while.
No, I stumbled into you, and it was here, like right now we're in Nashville, Tennessee. We're at the National Wild Turkey Federation annual convention, the big show. And years ago I was here, and you were just like on the show floor, and there's a bunch of people gathered around, and you were turkey calling. And I remember being like, how in the world does this guy do it without, the assistance of a call, like just to make the noise. And then I just did various bits of research and looked in and heard, you know, a story that you've probably by now, maybe you're sick of telling, but I'm gonna make you tell it again and then talk about your life after that. But explain a little bit.
Okay, yeah.
A teaser.
So 2005, well, let me backtrack a little further than that. So I always grew up hunting.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, that was my passion growing up. And when I was a little kid, my dad would take me rabbit hunting. And just, you know, I fell in love with doing that. So I wanted to.
And you grew up where?
In Louisiana.
Okay.
South Louisiana, where it's hot and every snake wants to kill you there. It's a terrible place to live. But
you guys would hunt cottontails down there?
Yeah. If you can avoid cottonmouths.
Oh.
it's a fun place to live, but it's for me, you know, growing up there, there wasn't as much variety to hunt as far as, you know, as to other states. I mean,
yeah.
We had deer and, you know, duck hunting. I never got into duck hunting down there. But, you know, we had a certain amount of animals that we could hunt there. So I just kind of picked and choose what I could hunt. So I grew up rabbit hunting, and then at the age of 11, I started doing research and I wanted to deer hunt. So at age of 11, I went out by myself and took my dad's 30-06, and I killed my first deer. From there,
all by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even know what I killed a button buck, and I didn't even know the difference at the time because I thought it was doe until I seen the little nubs on the horn when I got to it. So
yeah,
that was a rush for me.
What else did you get? What else did you guys hunt? Like, give me the full gamut of what you hunted in those years in southern Louisiana.
So for me, my whole family was a small game hunting family. So you know, rabbits. We had squirrel dogs. I actually had competition squirrel dogs.
I don't know, really?
Cool.
Yeah. So we traveled the country with dogs doing competitions.
And did you guys have other treeing dogs? Did you guys have like raccoon dogs and stuff?
Yeah. So my dad had hounds for raccoons, but I didn't want to stay up all night chasing behind a ringtail. I stuck to my squirrel dogs and my rabbit dogs. That was my passion.
So you had obviously separate dogs, right?
Yeah. So we had beagles for rabbit dogs. We had original mountain curs for squirrel dogs, and I think he had he started out with walkers. I think that's what he kept for coonhounds is walkers.
Yeah. Did you guys live out in the country?
No,
definitely
really? Not the country. Yeah, we were in the city. Yeah, with about 15 dogs.
And every neighbor you ran into hated you.
I mean, we got hate mail twice a week. Wasn't bad.
But all the dogs?
Nah, probably because I was in the front yard skinning raccoons or something like that.
Yeah. So you guys didn't fit in.
Not technically. I mean, but it was one of those deals where, you know, just growing up back then compared to now was so much different. That was more acceptable, like it wasn't as frowned upon back then.
Yeah,
but like now, if I try,
you mean to be like
now,
a hunting family out skinning stuff out and whatnot?
Yeah. No, that's now in like today's society and generation, like that's frowned upon like terribly.
Yeah, you know, even in like we live in Southwest Montana, you know, and one of the guys we work with, Seth, he had a like a deadhead buck he found, you know, mm-hmm. He had it out in his yard, and he could overhear the neighbors, like, aghast about this guy's got a deer head in his yard, and that's so disgusting. It's like, what the world? It's Montana, man, you know?
So, funny story that just actually happened last, Thursday? So, it happened Sunday. So, I just moved here to Tennessee, so I got an apartment here. I was coming home Saturday night, and I hit a deer, okay? But this is about to be a crazy story. So I hit this deer, and if for people that listen don't know, I'm in a wheelchair. So on my truck, I have a lift to lift my chair on and off the truck. So it snowed, the ground's wet, everything like that. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll just hit this fresh deer. I'm not about to let it get a waste. So I pull inside the road. I back my truck up to put this deer on the back of the truck. I thought I could lift it by myself. Turns out
like,
I was very wrong.
Homer, so you back up, but you're down, like you get in your wheelchair and you're down on the ground in your wheelchair.
I get out of my truck in my chair and then
in your chair. Okay.
Yeah, I'm
okay.
In my chair. I'm in my chair. So I roll around to this deer and I'm trying to like lift it up to put it in the bed of my truck.
Huh.
Okay. That didn't work out.
Cars are blowing past.
Actually, it was like, this is where it gets interesting. The road that I was on was closed.
Okay.
But it's where I lived.
Oh, because of all the flooding around here.
I don't know why it was closed.
Okay.
I don't know why. But
I overheard somebody say that there's like 6 counties around Nashville that are closed right now, and I was thinking, how can you close an entire county?
But it's been flooding pretty bad. But I don't know why the road was closed. But like it was like only one lane that was closed, so I just kind of went around the sign, which I probably shouldn't have done.
I'm sympathetic. I understand.
You know, my house was a mile away from there, so I mean, it's like I'm not driving all the way back around the interstate to go do it. So I'm trying to lift this deer up on the back of my truck. It doesn't work. So nobody's coming by, so it's by myself. So I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to use my lift on my truck to like hoist this deer up.
Oh, that's good.
It's kind of like a crane.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to do that. So I dragged the deer to the side of the truck and I try and like.
Well, you want this deer bad.
Listen, I just got a brand new truck. Okay. And if I hit a deer with a brand new truck and like it damaged, I'm going to get something out of it.
Yeah, I got you.
So, I mean, I got to pay the insurance. It's going to be an expensive deer. So I try and like pick the deer up enough to like get the rope around it so I could put it on the back of my truck. Picked this deer up enough to like where my body shifted and my chair rolled from up under me down the hill.
Oh.
So now I'm sitting on the side of the road with a deer across my lap. My chair is gone, and I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to do this. Soaking wet, by the way. Ground's wet. So I finally crawl back to my truck, get the lift, hook it up, and I get the deer in better truck. What I didn't realize is I needed the lift to get my chair on back of the truck.
Mm.
So now I got a terrible situation. I finally get all that taken care of. Next day, this is going back to skinning in the yard. The next day, a buddy of mine comes over, and we're trying to figure out where we're going to clean this deer at. Literally, we take it to my apartment, through the house, and skin it on the porch.
That's good digging.
Yeah. If they hear this, I'm probably going to get evicted.
But, yeah, like your landlord right now is like, hold on, what's this dude's name?
Yeah.
I feel like I just rented this dude the place.
Yeah. By the way, my name is John Travolta.
Yeah. Well, show me where it says that in the lease, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it a buck or a doe?
It was a doe. It was a small doe.
So you got it in the freezer?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to have it's probably some back traps this weekend.
You got a girlfriend?
No, I do not.
No, so you don't have anybody cooking for her.
No, and I can't cook worth a crap.
No.
I'm going to burn 40% of this deer, just to let you know.
That's all right. So let's go back to when you were younger. Like, you're 11 and you strike off and go figure out deer hunting.
Yeah, so I figured that out.
And what kind of area are you hunting in? Like public land, or you guys know people with properties?
No, we had friends of my dad's, so we just, you know, go hunt on their place.
Okay.
And we'd hunt in a swamp sometime. We'd hunt in, you know, a lot of pines in Louisiana where we were.
Mm-hmm.
There's some hardwood timbers. But it just depends. You know, every 100 miles, the terrain changes a little bit. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get into.
Yeah.
So after that, like the next couple years, I was like, all right, I'm really intrigued by deer hunting. So my dad had a cabinet shop. He's a carpenter. And like, he would go work at the shop, and while he's there, I'd go hunting. Like, okay. I'd go back behind the place and go hunting. And then going on a little further, I came across turkey hunting magazine, TV shows, whatever, however I found it. And I was like, okay, cool. I want to turkey hunt. You know, I want to hunt all year round. So I want to go rabbit hunting in the morning, deer hunting in the afternoon. In springtime, I want to turkey hunt.
Yeah.
So.
And your old man wasn't a turkey hunter.
No. No, nobody. No, my family was small game hunting. Like, they didn't know anything about deer hunting, turkey hunting, none of that.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to get some books, you know, go Walmart, buy some calls, stuff like that, just to try and do it. So we get all that stuff taken care of, and we go turkey hunting one Sunday after church. And we're sitting there in the middle of the day, and I'm about 25, 30 yards away from my dad, and we start calling. And I'm an okay caller. At this time, I was okay. And
what kind of calls were you using back when you used to use calls?
I think I had one of those push box calls.
Yeah.
Mm. I think that's what I had. And I don't remember what I think my dad had a slate call, whatever he had, it sounded so bad. It was the worst turkey call ever.
Oh, I mean, so I'm a bit better than your dad.
It's a close race. It's a very close race. So, how this turkey came, like, this is like where I'm going to take credit from you, because as bad as he called, a turkey still came in.
Yeah.
So,
well, here's the thing, man. I want to clarify. I am deadly on turkeys. I get all kind of turkeys. I prove a point.
Steve called in a turkey for me last spring.
I prove a point by getting, I use my poor calling. I time it. Everything else I do nice. And I drive around in my vehicle now calling to practice more. But so, anyway, we're not here to talk about my calling.
So, you know, this is a theory. This is a theory I have about turkey hunting. Turkey hunting is like dating at a bar.
Go on. I like it already. Right, I already agree.
Like, it's like going to a bar. Like, the time that you want, you have to have like a high class call to get his attention.
Okay.
The later in the day,
the drunker he gets,
the worse your call can be, the more he's interested.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's a 10 at 2 and a 2 at 10.
Mm-hmm.
That goes the same with turkey hunting.
Yeah.
You could sound like the worst hen in the woods. By 10 o'clock in the morning, he gets away from his hen. It don't matter after that. It's an easy bird to kill. If he gobble, you could kill him.
Yeah, that's interesting because I do kill a lot of turkeys around 10 a.m. We're just talking about that. Yeah.
I like the way we said it better, though. You know,
a 2 at 10 and a 10 at 2. You got to remember that.
All right, so I want to keep tracking what happened. What happened to you get into a transform in many levels a transformative accident that you get into turkey hunting. Mm-hmm. Are we on like the turkey hunt?
Yeah, this is a hunt. Like my dad, we go down to this place.
You and your old man are hunting together.
Yeah, yeah. So we go to a place where we rabbit hunted, and we're going down this gravel road. I find a feather in the road. I was 100% sure that it was a turkey feather. Looking back at it now, I'm pretty sure it was like a hawk feather.
Okay.
So I'm not sure there's turkeys on this place. So we go set up, and
just based off the presence of a feather.
I was 13, Steve.
I'm not dogging on it. I'm not dogging on it. I just want to make sure I'm understanding. Like you're not hearing gobbles and whatnot.
No. It's like, I don't know, 10, 11 o'clock in the day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we just going out there. Like, I think he just wanted to shut me up as a kid because that's all I talked about.
Yeah, I got you.
So we go out there and we, you know, get 25, 30 yards apart from each other. And he's sitting on one tree and I'm sitting on another tree. And we're calling back and forth. And he had a 12-gauge double eye buckshots. And I had a 410, and I'm not going to lie, I think I had like a slug in it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like first turkey hunt, I was like, it's bigger than a chicken, shoot a bigger load.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just my mindset.
You guys just weren't tuned into the rules and whatnot.
No.
No.
First turkey hunt, I just, not going to lie to you, Steve, like I did not do my research on this part.
Yeah. You were a kid, man.
Yeah, it's just, you know, one of those things. Now I know, because I never want to get shot with a 12-gauge double up buckshot.
Yeah, I mean, I grew, you know, there's a lot of, yeah.
No, we
when
just
when you're young, it's all kind of, you don't even need to apologize, man. When you're young, at a certain for a long time, you're just sort of reliant on the people around you. Like you're reliant on the people around you to know like what's up and what you're supposed to do. And even when you know, I found being young, even when you know stuff you're not supposed to do, if the older people around you do it, you just took it as being that's like how you would do it.
You know, it's funny that you brought that up. I was telling my buddy mine the other day, he's like, growing up as a kid, like I didn't know what a no trespassing sign was.
Yeah,
you see woods, I went hunting. I mean, that was it's a different time period, but I mean, I didn't know what a no trespassing sign was.
My old man would go down the road if someone had too many up, he'd think it was kind of an eyesore, and him and his buddy Eugene would go down and they'd take them down. Generation, man. And then when you're young, it's like you'd have to be pretty old to question your old man. Like you with your old man. I don't know. I assume my old man knows what's going on.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I knew that there was land and there was animals on it and I wanted to go hunting.
Yeah.
So we're calling and a turkey comes behind the tree that I was sitting on.
Okay.
And I could see my dad off to my left and he's getting ready and he don't see me. And
he don't see you because he didn't know where you went and set up.
Well, I mean, I was wearing Realtree camouflage. I mean, I blend in with everything.
Yeah.
Shout out to Realtree for that. I'm just joking. So he doesn't see me because, like I said, I'm tucked against a tree, and I think he's more focused on the bird.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he shoots, like before he shoots, like I can see him like put the gun up, and like I can see the whole like everything going at him. He puts the gun up.
You see the turkey?
No, the turkey's behind me. I can't. So like.
I understand now.
I'm facing forward, and he's to my left, about 20 yards. Like I can't.
I got you.
Bird's behind me. I don't know.
He's aiming at a turkey behind you.
Yeah,
but barely behind you.
Yeah. So I just stay still on the tree because I know that you know something's there. So I just stay still, and like I can look out of the corner of my eye, like by tilting my head just enough to see him click the safety off and pull the trigger, and I see fire. My body goes numb, ringing in my ears, and like I just can't do anything. Like, my body goes completely numb. He runs over, he picks me up, and he's carrying me out of the woods. And I was like, Dad, you shot me. You know, he's got 911 on the phone, he's carrying me out of the woods. And EMS gets there, and they put me in the back of the truck. And I was like, this is it. I'm done for. I was like, Lord, just protect my dad. That's it.
How many of those buckshot pellets hit you?
7. Yep. I get hit in my esophagus. My left arm, one hit my left arm, across my chest, 2 in my right arm. I still have one in my pelvis, still have one in my right shoulder.
Oh.
My lung and stomach. And one hit my spine, T1, T2 area.
Where's that?
It's upper, like just right above the mid-chest.
One hit your spine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was your last, like, lower body movement ever was that day?
Yeah. And then the thing is, you know, I was a point guard for basketball. I was, you know, high up on the baseball. I mean, I love baseball and basketball. I mean, I had a pretty good athletic thing going on. And
yeah,
it's like that in the moment, taken away. So I get to the...
Aside from your general running around in the woods all the time from the sounds of it.
Yeah. I mean,
but you had no, you couldn't have had any idea what was going on.
I had no idea, no. I knew that I got shot. That's all I knew. And
you couldn't, but you obviously couldn't move.
No, couldn't do anything. Like, I had ringing in my ears, body completely numb.
Huh.
I mean, it was pretty much like I was lifeless. I was just, I had enough energy to look. That's it.
And what, your old man carried you, but he makes a call and just carries you out to where an ambulance can get to.
Yeah. So I get into the back of the ambulance and I black out. Funny thing is, I didn't know I could get blacker, but I blacked out. So I wake up and there's this light, this beautiful blonde lady. She's like, Josh. And I look there, I was like, you're an angel? She's like, no, I'm your nurse. I was like, dang, girl, I was trying to get your wing number. What up? And from there, you know, the doctors came in and I think I had 13 surgeries. And I died on the operating table twice. And I stayed in the hospital for, I want to say, 3 months.
And they resuscitated you?
Yeah. Yep.
So 13 twice. Surgeries in within that 3 month?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy. I had, like, my whole, like, under my chest, like, from my stomach down, like, past my belly button, cut open my back from... the base of my neck all the way down. My pelvis is cut open. I have cuts down my side. I mean, I look like Frankenstein. Just to be a clear vision of it.
And were you conscious for most of this time, part of this time?
You know, with the accident, so when they transferred me from one hospital to another, I don't know how this happened, but they dropped me on a helicopter. So, like, on the gurney when they were transporting me.
Yeah.
They dropped me on a helicopter. My head hit the base of it. And it put a, I don't know, it messed my head up. Like, so if I ever take my hat off, like, I have a big, big missing spot and a scar in the back of my head. So, like, my memory is, like, very bad from it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So.
So, what's the state of your father while this is going on?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I mean, I just can't.
Was it just your dad? Is your mom around too?
My mom's around. My whole family's there.
Okay.
But I mean, being in the hospital so long, I mean, I was on so much medication and, you know, the fact that I couldn't even remember stuff, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I got you. So you mean like during this month, you know, or 3 months, you don't know what your father's state was?
No, I don't.
You're just trying to stay alive.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that I had people come visit me. I mean, I vaguely remember people come and visit me. But other than that, I think I was so medicated that I slept most of it. I mean, I just, either that or I've blocked it out mentally and I just, I just, like I said, honestly don't know.
So at what point did it become, there's kind of two transitions I'm curious about. Like, what point did it become that the dust settles and you know that probably, barring some kind of medical, you know, breakthrough that doesn't yet exist, you'd like probably never walk again. When do you know that to be true? And then how long goes by before you're sort of like ready to attack life again?
So the doctors came in and said, you know, you've been shot, you know, you're paralyzed, you won't be able to walk again. But I'm not fully paralyzed. Like the bullet, it severed my spinal cord, but it didn't cut it all the way.
Okay.
So it's the body's super weird. So like I can like feel things. I just can't walk.
Oh, I see.
But it's not like a normal touch, it's more like of a tingling sensation.
Okay.
So like for a spinal cord injury, I can't regulate my body temperature. So if I get hot, it's like I'm, you know, about to pass out. And I stay cold all the time, even if it's like 70 degrees and a wind blows. Because the spinal cord injury, I just can't regulate my body because it doesn't send those signals to my brain correctly.
Oh, really?
That's something I've never thought about before.
No, I didn't know.
So, I mean,
I always think of it just being like a movement thing. I never think about it being a, like other functions of the nervous system.
It messes your whole body up. I mean, it just, because I mean, the nerves, it goes to your brain and it sends it back down to wherever, you know, even your fingers or like you want to move your legs, that all goes up your, you know, I guess it's like a railroad going back up to your brain, you know, just if it's cut, there's no signal. It can't receive that. So you just don't work.
Are you able to, like if you say you imagine you want to move your leg, are you able to, at this point, remember like what that felt like to like without thinking about it, you'd like go to move your leg and it would move? Like, do you still have the sense that you can make like the impulse to do it, but it just isn't answered?
So have you ever heard of like I think it's called phantom pains?
Yeah.
It's more like that.
Okay.
But I still have my limbs.
Yeah.
So I can like feel it, but it doesn't really do anything.
Yeah.
So I guess like mentally it's there, but physically it's not.
Yeah.
So, and it's aggravating. It's very aggravating.
I can only imagine.
I know like when I first started doing therapy, I could have a little bit of like movement in my feet.
Intentional movement.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I guess being in a chair for so long, my muscles just tightened up so much that I don't know if it's just my muscles are just too tight. They just can't get, the signal can't get in. I don't understand it. So yeah. It's just one of those deals where I just roll with it and keep going.
Okay. To the second part, after your accident, you get clear about what your future is going to look like. It's probably hard to comprehend. But how many months or years goes by before you sort of are like, that you're back in? Like, you're alive. You're a human being here on Earth. There's shit you got to do, right? You're going to like, you got to resume school. Find a way to enjoy yourself. Like, what is the gap like?
2 weeks.
Oh, really?
I got out of the hospital and,
2 weeks?
2 weeks after being out of the hospital, I went right back, honey.
No shit.
Yeah. You got to be tough if you're stupid.
Who did that decision making?
It was me. So the thing was, like, I was being babied so much, and I didn't like that.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it was just one of those deals where I just, like, look, I don't want to be baby. Like, stuff happens. Like, I'm not going to be sit here and, you know, be someone's, like, burden. And that's what I felt like. I felt like a burden to my family because they had to take care of me. My whole life just changed. So, one day my mom was in the house. I was like, look, I'm going hunting. She's like, what? She's like, I'm going hunting. She was like, I will finish killing you. Like, you're not going hunting. Like, you lost your mind. So, that day I made her very mad because I went back hunting.
In a wheelchair, obviously. Uh-huh.
So, from that point, I had to, learn how to adapt. I mean, it was a hell of a challenge. It still is, you know, nowadays. But going from like using your limbs and then like transferring to a chair and trying to figure out how to get across logs and rocks and stuff like that, that's hard as hell. Like, that's challenging. But that challenge is what drives me. Like, that's what makes me want to do more. Like, if I see something that I can't do or I feel like it's not in the cards, like, that makes me insane. Like, that makes me want to do it even more. So going out after the accident, that made my drive and passion for hunting so much more.
This sounds like a dumb, maybe it's not a dumb question. I don't know if you can think about it this way. And I know you're only 13 when you were injured, but what percentage of the places, right, that you might normally have gone became just inaccessible to you?
Oh, 96%.
Okay.
So I mean, major. Yeah.
So you were off stomping through the swamp and...
Oh, yeah, yo. It's... I mean, honestly, like, I couldn't roll through the yard.
Okay. I was going to ask, like, your home situation.
Yeah.
Even, like, did your dad have to do some serious carpentry work on the place?
Yeah, so I mean, I had to, like, get a ramp and, like, Like everything had to be modified.
Okay.
The house had stairs, had to get a ramp, or widened bathroom doors, or widened doors for the bedroom, or making cabinets lower for me to get into them and stuff like that. I mean, like everything at that moment changed. I mean, it's one of those things where you go from, you know, having a normal life to, like, I mean, it's pretty much having to depend on someone or have things accessible for you in your lifestyle. I mean, it just, like, at an instant, it just changed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like I said, you know, daily activities, you know, if I just wanted to, you know, get up and go take a shower or whatever, I mean, it took me a lot longer to just to do that. Like, getting dressed, I mean, it may have taken me, you know, 3 minutes to get dressed normally. I mean, that transferred to 15 minutes, you know, just because I have to, pretty much my arms are my crutch for my legs too. Yeah. So it just makes things a lot harder. And then transferring from like a chair to a car or to a tub or to the bed, all that made it so much challenging. And then, like I said, 13 years old, like I was a scrawny kid. Like I didn't have much at all to throw my weight around.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it made everything that much more challenging.
What was, how was your dad doing? Like once it was clear that you were okay and you were ready to get back out, I mean, was your dad just so guilt-ridden that he wasn't able to function, or was he able to be a dad, like to do a good job being a dad despite that guilt?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, like once I started getting back into the hunting side of things, I think that it made him a little bit easier about the situation, knowing that I wasn't letting it stop me.
Okay.
So I think that was like a settling point.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously, I'm pretty sure, you know, in the back of his mind, you know, he's like, okay, well, you know, this is, you know, because of me. I mean, I'm pretty sure he had guilt for that, but that time period, I just don't remember that much.
Do you think, like, looking back on it, do you think that for a dad in a situation like that, do you think it's better for the dad to just carry on and be strong, or do you think someone wants to see the guilt?
Honestly, I mean, it's life. Life happens. I mean,
yeah.
No, you have no control of the cards. So holding yourself at blame and being guilty or having that guilty conscience about it, I mean, of course, you know, you're going to think about it. It's going to be in the back of your head and all that stuff because, you know, that's life. You're human. That's what's going to happen. But I think guilt will drive you to an early grave if you let it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think him seeing me push forward and not letting it get a hold of me,
yeah,
made him a lot stronger.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
What was your feeling about, you'd been injured by a firearm, but you started hunting right away. You didn't have any sort of like, you didn't have fear of or anger toward toting a shotgun around the woods. Like you didn't look at it like, man, that's the thing that almost took my life.
Actually, I did. I kind of had like a, honestly, still to this day, I'm very weary around certain firearms.
Yeah.
That's why I love bow hunting so much. I mean, it's just,
okay.
I've got to bow hunting, I think, at like 15, 16, and I just really stuck with it. I mean, I don't trust a lot of people with guns.
Yeah.
It's not the fact that I don't trust them. It's just the fact that it's a man-made item, and anything can go wrong anytime.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I kind of have a little bit of PTSD towards it, but
that's understandable.
I mean, yeah.
I could also understand if you said, and I never went in the woods again.
Yeah, no, but I, like, even I'll shoot an animal with a rifle. I mean, that doesn't bother me, but still, at certain points, like, it just, I have that PTSD that just, like, that mental image is in my head. And I just,
yeah.
Sometimes it freaks me out more than anything.
Tell people about how you became interested in turkey calling and realize that somehow your injury like manifested in such a way that you were able to have this like super special talent?
Oh, that's easy. I didn't have friends growing up.
Yeah.
I'm just joking. So,
well, I didn't know if you could tell me that your friends bailed on you because you were in a wheelchair. I don't know. No?
50-50.
Okay.
Thin the herd a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in high school, like, I was, like the cafeteria was, like, half a mile from the school. So, like, I had to get people to, like, push me down to the cafeteria and stuff like that. It just became a pain. Like, I felt like I was such a burden to, like, my friends and family. So, I think my high school years started making me very independent, and I'm grateful for that. Like,
really?
Yeah, I'm super grateful for that. Because the fact is, like, I live by this quote, like, you don't know who you are as a person until you are absolutely alone. And, you know, I guess I was comfortable being independent or, like, depending on someone until I didn't have that someone. And then figuring out who I was as a person and leaning on myself more, becoming more independent, made me truly, it made me super interested in myself, like my capabilities, like what makes me tick, like what's my passion, what drives me. And I think that's what those high school years did to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I had friends, but I had to fend for myself.
Yep.
You know? My friends would go to lunch and just, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, we forgot about Josh. And I'm like, all right, cool. I'm sitting here waiting on somebody to help me with lunch. You know, it's already an hour past and I still ain't eaten. So, you know, I just, it built me, it started building my character.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm appreciative of that.
But man, I could imagine that just by no fault of your own, it could just as easily destroy your character, man. Some people. Not, I don't mean you.
Yeah. No,
but you can
see
a person becoming just like, sociopathic's not the right word. 'Cause it has like such a, I guess like just like losing faith in people.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was, you know, early on in my years, I was at that point. Like I was in such a bad place. I was, you know, I felt like I was a burden to everybody. I mean, I've contemplated suicide. I mean, I went through that whole route of depression, but having a mindset of, you know, God left me here for a reason.
Uh-huh.
And I battle with God. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I mean, I was like, you know, you say you love your child. Why would you do this to me? Like, what were you thinking? Like, I had my battles. You know, I faced my demons, and I've been down that route. But, you know, being able to appreciate the little things in life makes it so much better as you keep going.
Yeah.
Cherishing those moments. I mean, and I think that's what got me through my darkest times, was realizing that even though I had lost my legs, I still had so much more. You know, just being able to sit back and be like, okay, I still have life. You know, I still can breathe. You know, I still can do what I want to do, even though I have to do it a little bit different. You know, it's not worth me, you know, committing suicide or like taking myself away from my family, even though like I felt like that was a better way. It's just an exit plan, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not a good exit plan, you know.
When you thought about suicide, were you imagining that it's that it takes you out of it, like it takes you out of yourself, or are you imagining it takes you away from all the people that you don't want to be that you don't want to feel like a burden to? Like, who are you doing a favor to, you or your family?
For me, I felt like it was more of a favor to my family.
Yeah. Like, suicide would have been that.
Yeah.
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 But, I mean, still, like, just obviously, like, it's, like, intense depression.
Oh, yeah, you know, super intense depression. Yeah. Like, I had to depend so much on other people, and they had to go out of their ways just to make sure that I was doing something, or, like, I was better. Like, I had to take medicine, or, like, whatever the situation was. I felt like I was such a burden on other people that it made me miserable. It ate me up inside.
Well, just the thinking of, like, you know, you said it, well, now it's an extra 15 minutes to get dressed, and it's an extra 10 minutes to do this, and extra this much time and this much time, just, and then to, and that's just to navigate normal everyday life.
Yeah.
And then be like, but I'm also going to try to still hunt. It just like the layers of complication. It just had to have been so daunting early on, especially, you know.
Yeah.
I remember the writer Jim Harrison, who we talked about a fair bit. He used to suffer from horrible depressions, and he described one time being in such a state of depression that it was like he couldn't picture getting dried off with a towel after getting out of it. It just seemed like too much of a hassle. And he talked about a friend of his one time demonstrating a very quick, efficient way to dry off with a towel after the shower, and him trying to like memorize the how to do it, because even that was just more than he wanted to deal with, you know, in that state, right?
It's major depression right there.
Yeah.
I mean, at least he took a shower. That's a plus side.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So, talk about the turkey calling, man.
So, with my accident, like, so I had a bullet hit my esophagus.
Okay.
I had a breathing tube in my throat for a very long time. And the doctors came in and said, well, you won't be able to talk again. You're going to need a trach. And when he told me that, I was like, you're wrong. No, I actually pulled the tube out of my throat. And I told the doctor, I was like, no, you're wrong. And when I did
so he thought like you could talk, but they're going to do something to you that it will make it that you can't talk.
The breathing tube was in my throat for so long that it damaged my vocal cords. So I was going to need a trach. Like I was going to have to talk with the.
Oh, I'm with you now. Yeah. I got you. Yeah. So I understand. And they were. This is just like an accepted.
Hey, dude, it's Louisiana. Our medical studies is not that great.
Yeah. So it's just like, oh, you know.
Yeah, and yeah.
And had you listened to him, that's what would have happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I guess it was like itching or whatever. So I pulled this dang on tube out of my throat and it altered my vocal cords. And.
Oh, pulling the tube out did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I had to go through like voice therapy after that. And, like, being 13, like, my vocal cords never really matured. So, like,
yeah, but I wouldn't get that. I mean, sitting here talking to you now, I wouldn't get that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My vocal cords never really matured. So
yeah, I guess I don't even really know what that means, man. Because, I mean, anyone listening right now, they wouldn't be like, wow, it's not like, you know, I'm trying to think. It's not like talking to a kid.
So, okay. So you bring that point up. So, like, I don't sound like a kid, but I can still hit a very higher pitch,
okay,
for my age or whatever, because when I had my vocal cords never fully matured because I had a tube in my throat and it altered my vocal cords.
I'm with you.
So that's why I can go from like talking now to like a freaking screaming elk bugle. I mean, just because those vocal cords never really matured and I can hit notes like a soprano.
Give me an example of a high note.
We're going to get kicked out of here, but all right. I can take the xylophone off. Here we go.
Are you want a speckle belly or you want an elk?
I want a speckle belly and an elk.
Speckle belly.
Oh, yeah. So is this like a thing you realized or did you start learning how to make turkey calls?
So I think, what year was it? Summer of 2013, I went to an outdoor expo show in Louisiana and this guy was trying to sell me a turkey call.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, no, I don't want to buy a turkey call. Obviously, I didn't want to buy a turkey call. Like, I've been shot turkey on it. So like, that was like not a thing for me.
You're like, I'm taking a break from turkey.
Yeah. So,
you better be a hell of a salesman.
Yeah. So he was trying to like sell me his call. Like, it sounded terrible. And me being like, I'm not gonna lie, like I grew up playing sports. I was point guard, pitcher, all that. So I was a little cocky when I was younger.
Uh huh.
So this guy was like trying to sell me his turkey call. He's playing. I was like, dude, it's like that don't sound good. So what kind of call you use? Me being a kid, a little cocky kid. It's like, I can do it in my mouth. Had no idea I could do it. No idea. He was like, well, let's hear it. I'm like, crap. This guy called me out of my bluff, and I was like, all right, do it again. And he did it, and I did the best that I could to mimic it. the owner of the company turned around and said, "Is that our call?" He's like, "No, that's a kid."
Really?
And they ran me away from the booth.
Really?
Yep. So I went to inside of the expo, and another guy was like, "Hey, that's pretty cool. Like, I feel like I just accomplished something, so I'm going around, you know, practicing and tuning it up, because, I mean, I just got ran away from a turkey calling booth because I sounded good." And, like, a guy noticed it. He's like, "Sounds pretty good. Like, what else can you do?" I was like, "I don't know. I just learned this 10 minutes ago." So, you know, people start giving me, like, "Oh, well, that's cool. Like, can you do this animal or this animal or this animal?" I was like, I don't know. So I started, like, YouTubing animal sounds.
Okay.
And I just, like, would practice it. But the way that I'd break it down is I would get an animal, figure out what sound it makes, and put it to the closest word. And I'd break that word down until it gets to that sound. And I just...
What's your word for a turkey yelp?
I think it's just yelp.
Okay.
But it's like a... It's not a full yelp. So if I try and explain how to do a turkey call to someone,
yeah,
I would say it's yelp, Y-E-L-P. Then you go Y-E-E-E-L-L-L-P. Yelp! 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 And then you extend that word, but in the cadence of, you want to have your, at the end of, you want your pitch to go just a little bit higher, so you want to, you know, flutter your tongue just a little bit, just to get that full pitch out. And then once you get that down, you know, you just want to speed it up just a little bit. So then
I like how you have a little rasp on there too, man.
So that's a part of the whole pulling tube out. So like I can like get to like a raspy pitch, or like I get to like a older like a growl to it. I mean, I can throw like three different turkey calls at it, you know, in a sequence. So
at this point you're starting to learn how to call, but you're not out turkey hunting. So you probably marry this with the turkey hunting pretty soon, right?
And I'm just thinking, like, this is such a killer skill for a very specific crowd that you no longer associate with.
Yeah, so here's the deal. So, like, after this show, like, people are like, "Okay, well, what else can you do?" It's like, I don't know. And, like, this is, like, when Facebook was, like, becoming, like, I was getting to use Facebook a little bit more.
Okay.
Like I said, this is 2013. Like, I think I was still, like, 20 years old or something like that. So I was just learning about Facebook, and I think I was just driving down the road one day, just being, I don't know, just being a dork. And I was like, turkey season is coming up, and I did this video. And I posted it, and, like, people start sharing. Like, "Oh, dude, like, you sound pretty good. Like, you're goofy, but you sound pretty good." And people start sharing. I was like, "Oh, well, what else can you do?" I was like, "I don't know." And they're like, "Well," they had this, like, animal call challenge thing going on Facebook because I made, like, some sounds. And this is, like, going towards the end of 2013. And then it got to the point where a buddy of mine noticed it, and he's like, "Hey, you need to come to ATA." I'm like, "I don't even know what ATA is." He's like, "It's like a big archery trade show. I mean, everybody goes there. You need to..." I'm like, "Okay, I'll see what I can do." I had no intentions of going to
ATA. He thought you should go there to do what, though?
And just, I don't know, I guess...
To hang out and call?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. He was like, "You just need to go." Like, "All right, cool, whatever, I'll go." But I say that, but I was shooting competition archery too, so, like, I guess that's kind of what he was thinking.
Oh, so you were like, okay, so simultaneously to the animal thing, like, you're hardcore shooting.
Yeah. It's like, after my accident, that drove me, like, further into wanting to do it more. Like, my accident, like, it put a fuel inside of me to want to do it more.
Are you shooting against... Like, are you shooting against other people who are in wheelchairs? Or
no.
You're just shooting general.
I'm shooting against everybody.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you got right back in there, man.
Yeah. And so,
but this is competition archery, like, yeah, shooting targets.
Yep. 3D ASA shoots.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. Okay, right. Got it.
So
your buddy's like, "I don't want to derail you," but your buddy's like, "Hey, man, go to ATA." It's,
yeah,
like, and you're like, "I don't know why, but I will go."
Yeah. So, and then I met another friend of mine, Kirsten. She was she's like, "Yeah, I'm going to ATA, just meet up there." Like, because, like, I've met these people from making animal sounds on Facebook. I mean, that's how I met these people. It sounds, yeah.
No, looking back
at it.
It sounds funny, but yeah. I love it. Yeah.
So
the Facebook, like, animal sound making crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like Dr. Doolittle online. but I talked to animals in a different way.
Yeah.
So it was like, all right, look, go to ATA and let's just like meet up. All right, cool. So I go and I meet my buddy Rob that invited me, hang out with him. Everything's fine. And then Kirsten, she was like, hey, let's go around the show. I was like, all right, cool. So we're going down this aisle and I see Jim Shockey. Like, he's like one of the only people I knew at the show. I see Jim Shockey. And I freak out and have a fangirl moment.
Yeah, like big 9 foot tall dude.
Yeah.
Cowboy hat.
Yeah. I freak out. I have a fangirl moment. So I was like, oh my God, there's Jim Shockey. And she was like, do you want to meet him? I was like, no, he's busy. He's got people around him. He's busy. So this girl goes through the crowd and like parts the crowd like Moses parting the Red Sea. And she's like, hey, Josh, this is Jim. Jim, this is Josh. I'm so freaking scared. Like, I don't say hey. I freaking goose honk at Jim Shockey. My nerves took over so bad that I goose honk at this guy.
Yeah.
And he was like, did you just honk at me? I was like, hey, I guess. I don't know. That's what you're saying. Can I guess? Hey, I guess. I don't know. I was so nervous. So he was like, that was pretty good. Like, what else can you do? Like, can you make some other sounds? So I just started like doing sounds and like somebody took out a cell phone and videoed it. And it got posted on Jim's page and it got posted on Eva's page.
Uh-huh.
And then like some other people are like, around and like they just saw me doing these sounds. So like the whole show, I was going around making calls for everybody. And like that's how I got my start. Like I went from being nobody from South Louisiana to when I got home, like my social media exploded. Like, it got really weird really quick. It just, because I mean, because I'm from a small town. Like, I was that kid that was, like, so, I didn't, it wasn't sheltered, but I was in my own little world, especially coming from an accident and, you know, figuring out life still.
Yeah.
Now I'm in, like, the public eye. Like, everybody wants to know, like, who you are, what can you do, and stuff. Like, that scared the hell out of me. Like, I'm not even lying to you. It just was so different going from, you know, being from a small town and being exposed to the world. And, you know, you get all these people from all over the places, you know, sending you messages and things like that, wanting to be friends, and you have no idea who they are.
Yeah, I got you.
So, I mean, it was a culture shock for me, honestly.
And it became like a business for you for a while.
Yeah.
Like, explain that, though. Like what? Like, what specifically were you being, did you want it being paid to do?
I honestly cannot, like, if someone wants to do this as a business plan, I cannot give you a guideline to do it. I will not recommend you go out, get shot.
There's no, like, Josh, no. Josh Carney path to business success.
No, there's not. There's not.
Honk at strangers until.
That's it. No, well, I mean, it's a little weird nowadays, but just I would not recommend that. But, you know, so I was, you know, doing these interviews for, like, radios, like, radio shows and, like these,
just like now, like same stuff I'm asking you.
Yeah, yeah. But I was doing it like at these shows and stuff. Like people would contact me, like, hey, like, you know, do you want to come do an event? Like, you know, we heard your story. Like, do you want to come speak at an event or wherever? It's like my first event was at a church in Crossett, Arkansas.
Okay.
Middle of nowhere. I was like, look, I've never did public speaking in my life. I don't know why you're calling me. You got the wrong guy. Like, I barely know how to make animal sounds. Like, I just learned that an hour ago.
But what were they wanting you to come do?
They wanted me to tell my story of how I overcame, how I got from a hunting accident to getting over it and getting back into hunting.
Yeah.
So, that's what I did. I stumbled my way through that first show. But the good thing about it, I was funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I did comedy before I got to the hunt industry.
Got you.
So I was able to throw in a serious point, cover it with a joke. So like I always kept the audience attention.
Yeah.
So that right there is like what kind of built me into getting into speaking.
Got you.
So this show here is my first, and then like after that it went well. So I was like, well, maybe I could do another one. From there I just changed style, you know, did things, you know, tweaked the little things here and there, and I got better at it. And from there, more people are like, hey, do you want to come speak at an event? Do you want to come to a seminar? Do you want to come host a disabled hunt? Like, do you want to do more stuff?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
Who's managing all this for you?
I was doing it at the time. I mean, I was young, dumb, and I didn't. I was.
But you're doing paid gigs, right?
I'm doing paid gigs.
But you're just like, here's my fee, and you negotiate it and contract it.
I honestly, like, at that time starting out, I had a really cheap fee because I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah, sure.
I had enough to, like, hey, yeah, cover my gas, my expenses, feed me, and get me a hotel. I'll be there. I had no idea when it came to business. So I was like, all right, well, I'm doing enough of these shows for cheap. Let me start charging. So, all right. So I was like, all right, cover my expenses, $500. I'll do it.
Okay.
That became, all right, well, it's getting better now. I got a little money. I can go back home, have, you know, a little bit to play with. You know, it's like, cool. I like that. From there, I started developing, okay, well, I'm getting more work than the money. You know, I was doing good, but I was overworking myself. I mean, because like I was on the road a lot. I mean, I think 2015, I hit like 260 days on the road.
No, but shit.
Yeah.
But all with hunting industry stuff.
Yeah.
How much did it, when you're doing this, you're talking about it all the time, and I'm guilty right now because I'm interviewing you right now, but how much did it become, like, did it ever get in your head where you sort of had a hard time that you'd separate you, like, as a fully formed person with, like, that you are, like, this embodiment of a story? Meaning that, like, you have, like, a narrative. You were injured horribly. You started hunting, and you have this gift to do animal calls. And people just want you to be, like, again and again and again and again. Tell me about that. Tell me about that. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
Does that cause, like, an identity crisis?
Yeah. Yeah, it actually does. So, honestly, so, like, going, it was super weird for me getting adjusted to it. So, like, I had to live two different lives.
Okay.
Like, when I was at events or shows or whatever, I had to be Son of the South. Like, that's what I went by, Son of the South. So I had a strictly show presence that I had to stick to. But outside of it, when I was, like, family, friends, like, I was Josh Carney. Like, I was just, let's hang out, cut out, I'm myself.
Yeah.
But when I went to a show, I was in that strictly, like, that entertainment mode.
Is it a requirement that you, as not Josh Carney, but you as the Son of the South, is it a requirement of the Son of the South that the Son of the South is in a good mood?
I'm always in a good mood. That's the thing, though.
So you're able to do it.
Yeah, I'm always in a good mood. Like, I mean, life has challenged me enough that I understand, like, bad things happen for a moment, and you can't let it ruin a day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if something, like, bad happens, once it's over with, it's over with. You know, just keep moving forward. I mean, don't let 60 seconds of your day ruin the other 23 hours and 59 minutes.
Dude, I'll lose 2 weeks off 60 seconds now and then. I haven't been forged by fire, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, like, it takes a bigger person to do it, and I think that's where I'm at. I mean, like, I just don't let a lot of things bother me. I mean,
yeah,
something can always be worse. And I think being able to, like over the years, I've done things with events with, like, kids with, like, cancer, like, terminal illnesses and things like that. I think that humbled me as a person. Like, okay, that truly humbled me. Like, I understand, like, I'm in a situation, but there are people out there in worse situations than I am, and they're happy about it. Like, they're grateful for what they have. So if I was bitter because I can't use my legs, like, that's selfish of me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, knowing that it could be worse is something that makes me more positive.
Yeah.
So if I have a bad moment, I don't let it affect the rest of my day.
Before we started recording, we had talked a little bit about, you know, your sort of view of operating within the hunting industry.
Yeah.
And you grew tired of it. Like, what sort of, like, define the hunting industry for me. You know what I mean? And tell me, like, what it means to grow tired of it or want to move beyond it. Because you went into, you do, like, a totally different line of work now.
Yeah, I'm totally different line of work. So, for me, the thing about the industry for me was, like, 6 years in it, Like, I was, I don't want to say I was, I'm going to be blunt. I was overworked, underpaid.
Okay.
Like, when I went to a show, I was always someone's puppet. Like, do this, do that, do this, do that. And, like, I never got a reward out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, okay, we're just going to use you for, like, your social media or, like, whatever you bring to the table. And, hell, Dave, if we don't want you, we just don't want you, you know? You do X, Y, Z for us, and you don't get anything out of the end of it. You know, and doing that for so long, it made me really bitter towards the hunting industry.
Okay.
Because it was always give me, give me, give me, and I never got anything in return.
Yeah.
I mean, I met some good people along the way, but if it wasn't for speaking events that I was doing, I would have never made an industry. I mean, it broke me down financially, mentally, like physically. Like, I was on the road so much trying to pursue this image that I had built in the hunting industry just to stay afloat.
Gotcha.
And, like, I was expected to do so much from the audience and from, you know, companies that wanted me to promote them for nothing. So that's where the whole persona of...
But do you think it's like, but don't you think it was because of just lack of management?
You know, that too, but so 2017...
Like, I think that could happen to many, many people.
Yeah, so 2017, I hired a business... So let me backtrack. So when I was talking to you guys earlier, so I had a guy that was trying to be my manager.
Okay.
He was...
credentialed or not credentialed?
Let me just say, like, he was a used car salesman, if that says anything.
Okay.
Okay, so he was a snake in the grass. So he wanted to be my manager, like, very shady, chicey dude. But at the time, I didn't know what management was. I was having fun. I was making a little bit of money here, and it got to the point where the things, like, I was more of a token item for him to put money in his pocket.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So learning that started burning a lot of bridges for me. So finally got rid of him, and I went back to doing things on my own. So I met this girl, this lady, Heather Shepherd, and she's my business partner. So we met, she booked me for an event. It was her family event, and she booked me for it. I mean, from booking it to me getting there to the show's over, everything was like to the T.
Okay.
Like, I mean, she's like, hey, Josh, you know, you have to be at this place at this time. You have to be here, here. Your break's here. You know, everything was like to a T. I think at the end of the show, like, her name went from Heather to Boss Lady. Like, I mean, she was just strictly, you know, focused on making sure that everything was in line and right.
Yep.
So after that show, I approached her like, hey, listen, like, I really don't know what the hell I'm doing. And from seeing you work and how you handle business, I want you as a part of my team. So she came on board with me, I think in 2017. And we've worked together flawlessly from there. So she took over that management position for me. So if someone wanted me to do a gig or event, I pull myself out of it.
Yeah.
I'd introduce them to her. She'd take care of it. That became a lot better for me. But at that time when that's happening, I was already at the point where I was starting to get worn out. And so, like, if it didn't fit, like, you know, criteria, like, I'm not going to drive from Louisiana to Wyoming just to go on a free trip for exposure.
Yeah.
You know, so just things like that. But as far as getting the sponsorship deals, I didn't understand that side of business. And she was so new to the industry at that time, too, that we were both learning. So I don't think it at the time, I think the way that we went about it could have been done a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was a little too late for that also.
So at what point did you decide that, or let me put it this way, when you got burned out on sort of servicing the hunting industry and that community, did your interest in hunting go away as well? Like, are you actively hunting right now? Or are you just done with it?
So 2018 was like my breaking point for the hunting industry.
Okay.
I had I want to say probably 8 to 10 sponsors. And like we had, like we were working, like, so with me and Heather, we were working on contract agreements, making sure everything was like right for the following year to make sure everything went. So
this is sponsorships where they're giving you gear?
No, this is monetary sponsorships.
Okay, so
this
like
is,
gear and
we're,
cash.
We're starting to make money now. So we have agreements lined up, and back to the other guy that was trying to be my manager, I did a hunt with him in Texas, him and another guy. They made a video of me. Obviously, I can't put my leg on a turkey to stop it from flopping. So I put my wheel on a turkey. And I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and lie to you. I mean, that was quote unquote my legs.
So walk me through. Like, you shoot a turkey.
Shoot a turkey.
And this is all being filmed.
Yeah. So I shoot a turkey. Turkey's on the ground, and like we're doing like the B roll and stuff like that. And they wanted to make a video of me. The whole storyline for this episode was me conquering, getting over a turkey hunting accident, getting back to turkey hunting.
Okay.
That was the whole storyline.
Which is a story you're familiar with.
Yeah, I was going to say, yep.
Yeah. So after I kill this turkey, after I shoot this turkey, like they're doing a film and everything like that, birds on the ground. They're like, okay, well, you know, just like now you're in a wheelchair. Like this is the mindset. You're in a wheelchair because of turkey hunting. Like now we want to make it look like you conquered, you know, this, like you just slayed the dragon. So like, all right, you know, just like, just put your wheel on the turkey's head. Like you just like defeated it.
Okay.
I don't know. This is like my first big, like TV show deal.
Oh so, yeah, man. I just seeing where this is going, it's so easy to get steamrolled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're with all these people and they know what.
Yeah.
And you're not familiar with it. You don't understand the end product.
I had no idea. But the end product is like, that's what I'm getting to. So it wasn't even like a terrible shot. Like it was just my wheel on a turkey. I mean, I see people with their foots on their neck. Oh, I just had a wheel on it. I wasn't even a turkey. Like the worst thing I did, I shot him in the face. It's the worst thing I could have done to a turkey. So
yeah, like yeah, preceded, you know,
yeah,
earlier I shot it with a gun.
Yeah. I just wanted to stop flopping. I mean, like obviously if the turkey gets back up, I can't run behind it.
Yeah.
So I mean, if I put my wheel on her head, he can't go anywhere. All right. So the guy and his partner, whoever he was working with, they put a video together. Like I had it was for a producer and editor, video sucked so bad. Like a 6-year-old could have did better.
Okay.
Like they had video, like the B-roll of like me looking at the turkey, like fanning it out, and like just showing like me showing the coloration of the feathers and everything. And then like it goes to a scene where like my wheel is on a turkey head, and like that was the finished product. So this guy, it's like a terrible video. So the guy,
it's meant to be that it's all one continuous action. You like
no.
You admire a turkey and then lay it back down and run it over?
I guess that's what they're trying to proceed.
Okay.
But it was such a terrible video. But it was enough to make sponsors have an easy way out. So this guy, I was doing seminars at shows and speaking events, things like that, and I was starting to get monetary sponsors. This guy, whoever I was working with, affiliated with, this guy sent out the video to, and like, I lost a lot of money over this stupid stuff. I mean, like, a lot of money because of a video of me shooting a turkey. And then, like, at this time, this is like when, I don't know if you guys remember, like, the Big Beal thing when he shot that elk or whatever and left it. This is like
in Wyoming.
Shot that elk, but accidentally hit a second elk.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So this was like around that same time period,
which is totally like that part of it, shooting elk and accidentally getting another one. That could happen.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
lots of people, but yeah. whether or not you own up to it.
Yeah.
You know.
So the companies that saw this video are like, oh, well, there's too much pressure on the hunting industry right now. We don't need this being a part of our business floating around because you put your wheel on a turkey's head. So it was an easy way out.
Mm-hmm.
So I started losing contracts. Like,
but like, okay. I haven't seen this video. Is, let's say I went to one of these sponsors that you lost the deal with. And I said to them, like, hey, what happened with, I don't understand what happened with Josh Carney. Like, what went on there? Like, do your best job of telling me what they would say.
I honestly don't know. I have no.
Like, you don't know that they, that, like, you can't picture, like, that they would have a different story than what you're telling me.
No.
It's like he put his wheel on a turkey's head.
That's all that it was. I put my wheel on a turkey's head. That's it. They're like, okay, well, it, honestly, it was an easy way out.
But easy way out implies that they wanted out.
They, it's like, okay, well, we don't have the budget this year. I mean, it's like, okay, well, now we have, oh, well, you doing this. That's not what we want to represent as a company.
And I mean, the video was perceived as such that it was, it was being pushed as something disrespectful against animals.
Yeah.
But I don't want to like belabor this video issue, but
it sucks so bad.
Was the video meant to do what it was supposed to do, or did the video, they put the video out there to be damaging?
They put it out to be damaging.
So they weren't like trying to make something great. Like, remember
So this was filmed for a TV show.
Okay.
They took enough of the footage from that to splice it down to make this video.
All right.
To send to the companies.
Got you. So it was like a...
It was intentional.
Yeah. It was a vendetta for something. Maybe you don't even know what.
The owner of the show and the producer got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And the producer was the guy that was trying to be my manager. So the owner of the show, once they got to it, the guy was trying to take down everything that the producer had.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in that mix of it.
Okay.
And at that time, I was being very successful, and I was on a lot. I had a lot of attention on me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was I was a very easy target. I mean, even heck, the guy still tries to use the video to send to people. I'm like, dude, that was 5 years ago.
No shit, really?
Yeah. 5 years ago. So it just, yeah. I've met some great people, honey. Don't get me wrong. But for every good person, I've met a lot of shady people too. I mean,
do you think is it hunting or is it like business?
I think it's both, to be honest with you. I mean, because from the business side of it, like, no one's going to show you, a lot of these people aren't going to show you their true colors. Like, they're going to want you to do, for me personally, like, I was, like, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. I was a puppet.
Yeah.
Like, I brought attention to a company for them to make a buck out of it, and I didn't make a dime.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
So, I was just a token item for them to gain something.
What was the last time you did what was the last time you did a talk? Like, gave a talk?
My last... my last speaking event had to be last year. Like I said, I took a huge break from the whole hunting industry after 2018. Like I said, I lost a lot in that industry. And, heck, I mean, I went to that show. I came back home, man. I had a heart attack. I mean, it stressed me out so bad that,
like, literally a heart attack.
Yeah. I flew back home. I went to the gym later that night. I was stressed out. I mean, this was like my shot. Like, I just finally started to make money. And, like, I lost a lot of money at a show because of that video.
It was timed for the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then the bad part about it, so, like, everything that was happening, so, like, going back to, like, the bad moments, like, I was letting those bad moments pile up.
Yeah.
So, I had just got turned down on a good contract. And after they turned me down, the guy that produced it and sent it out walks up. And I was livid. Like, emotionally, like, I was in a different state of mind at that point, that it was a miserable show for me. Like, it was eating me up inside. like a horrible show for me. Then another thing, I was losing, spots of like being a. So this is a time phrase where the hunting industry was so focused on, you know, being a cute blonde chick, you know, half naked, doing shows just to get, you know, promotion. And I felt really, I felt that it got away from the value of hunting that I was just, I don't know, I guess I was just a little bitter about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I was losing, I felt like I was losing out to people that wanted to be something that they weren't. And, like, I got caught up in that realm of trying to be someone else that I lost focus of who I was. Like, I didn't understand the fact that, you know, that I was getting caught up in that mix. So.
Yeah, no, I know what you're, yeah, there's like, you know, I mean, sex sells and everything.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It definitely sells underwear.
Yeah.
And all kinds of stuff. And yeah, like, you know, as much as it's even fair to talk about like the hunting industry as though it's this sort of like definable, containable thing, I know what you're talking about when there became this, it's sort of like this male fantasy thing,
uh-huh,
where it'd be that, you know, you have these people that like, oh, that, you know, they're so beautiful and they like to hunt.
Yeah.
And it's like this like complete total package. Right, that you like present as a marketing thing.
Yeah,
right. It's like all my problems. I'm lonely, and I have no woman. And now look, this one's beautiful, and she would appreciate my hunting prowess.
Yeah,
not only that, but she loves to hunt.
Yeah,
and that's how I will sell products.
Yep, yep. Bunch of old creepy guys in hunting tree.
So
back to that subject.
Yeah.
I like when that was going on, like I was like, all right, well, a lot of these people can't, like, it was so it was so insta modeled. The hunting industry became so insta modeled that I was like, all right, cool, this is not even hunting anymore. It's Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like something that I was like, I was one of those guys that I was a rebel. Like, I was like, look, I bust my butt to go out here and do it, and I know what I'm bringing to the table. I don't feel that it's right for me to lose something to somebody that just picked up a gun 2 weeks ago and killed an animal.
Like, right, felt like you had a product.
Yeah.
But you were losing some of these opportunities, yeah, some of these paid opportunities to folks that didn't even have a product.
I felt that I brought more value to the table than what I was getting out of it. And to lose a spot to someone that had no knowledge, couldn't teach you about anything hunting related, to lose it to a cute face, I was in a very ill mood. So I made a post, and it wasn't even it wasn't bad. It was more information or anything, saying how the hunting industry was just becoming more of that sex sale type thing, and it flared up a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Because I'm one of those guys, like, I'll say what the room's not willing to say. Like, everybody's taking it, hell, I'm just gonna say it. I'm gonna clear the elephant out. It, that's what it was. It was one of those deals. Well,
it's a super sensitive subject, though, man. Because that's a lot of that's a super sensitive subject. It's a super sensitive subject because the hunting industry traditionally was not hostile. Well, in cases hostile to women. I hesitate to say hostile to women. Not as inviting to women. Meaning, right? Like 90% of the people that buy a hunting license are guys.
Yeah.
10% are women. I imagine that you would always have, I don't picture a world in which there'd be equal representation between men and women. I don't picture that. But I feel if dads and whatever, dads, granddads, didn't have such a strong bias toward the boys in their family, in favor of the boys in their family, and against participation from women, we would land not at 90-10. Maybe it'd be 70-30, like 70% male, 30% female, 60-40. Mm-hmm. There's no way it's going to be 50-50. I think there's biological factors that would prevent 50-50, but it wouldn't be 90-10. Mm-hmm. So there is a thing where, okay, to increase female representation in hunting is important. To hear women's voices about hunting and in hunting is important. But I think that there's also like a thing, and I recognize it too, which is very much people take that need but then they can't help themselves but to like sexify it.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
And I want my daughter. Like I have a 7-year-old daughter. I have like, I don't overpressure her, but she is very clear on the fact that her dad very much wants her to go hunting and fishing to the point where I want her to feel a little guilty when she doesn't go. Do I then need to have it turn like, do I want her to hunt in a bikini top? No. I feel like she could look roughly like her brothers. Like the same basic getup that her brothers are comfortable in should be suitable for my daughter. So this thing that we're talking about, like I recognize it's very complex.
Yeah.
To be like everything, man.
It is complex to the point too, where is if your daughter was like, yeah, but dad, what I want to do is hunt in a bikini top. And then you would have to then be like, I really want you to go.
Yes.
It's a double.
No, dude, Cal, that's a great point, man. Because that would be, what if she said to me, this is how I like to do it. I love it. It's fun like this.
Would you agree
it makes
to
it, it fun like this. What am I going to say? Like, no, you cannot go in that bikini top. She's 7 right now, so we're not there yet. I got time to figure it out. But yes, it's hard to deal with.
Yeah. And so then you throw, and you look at the demographics, right? And you throw anybody up on a poster, and the marketing person's like, I want that poster to represent the middle of the bell curve, the vast majority, to draw the most people in. You know, and so you get in this conversation where it's like, here's this very, very pretty girl, man, whatever. Is that representing the majority of the bell curve? Is that bringing in the most people? It's going to represent some faction 100%, but it's not going to represent them all.
Yeah, they're advertising a water park in the elevators in the place we're staying in right now. And the advertisements for the water park are families. And the moms in the things are in bikinis, but it's like not sexualized. It's a water park and there's families.
I think a bikini
it's not sexual.
I think a bikini is more appropriate for a water park than a deer stand.
Yeah, I just want to say, like, I don't want to overemphasize the bikini aspect of this because there are places where people, you know, should be, everybody runs around. But, man, a little bit, the final complexity, this is all I'm going to say about it because, not all I'm going to say about it, but the other thing I found is that women don't necessarily need 46-year-old dudes like me explaining this to them.
Yeah.
So I get it. I get it. But I understand. I understand.
So where'd you go from there?
I took a really like a detoxing break. I mean, I still had a couple events and a couple companies that I was working with. And I fell off the radar a little bit to figure out who the hell I was. Because, like I said, I focused so much on being this persona to fit this hunting image that I didn't know who I was anymore.
Like, and I want to ask about your friends group, too. Because before you were like, well, one way with my friends group and one way with... So your friends group, are they... do you have a bunch of folks like in your core friends group that are like... let's go hunting, or are they not in the hunting world?
So I
not industry, but like to be outdoors, like hunting.
I have friends that are in the industry that I will go hunting with. But when I wasn't of value to them, I lost a lot of friends.
Sure.
Got you.
I mean, if I didn't bring it to the table, well, you know, and the funny thing is like, I think for these trade shows, like we're all buddy shaking hands. Oh my God, I miss you. It's great to see you. All this stuff for the rest of the 360 days, 306 whatever days. I don't get a word from them. Don't know who you are. Mm-hmm. You go to a different show, they're like, oh, well, who are you? I mean, like that's the kind of people like we're running with in this industry. Like if it doesn't benefit them at the time, then you know, you're just another sticking away in.
But man, I think that you're,
No. I'm not saying it for anybody. I just have a bad sense of picking people.
But I think you're talking about people. I don't think you're talking about the hunting industry, but I'm like, I don't know. Like, if we were in cosmetics,
if we were in the cosmetics industry,
I feel like maybe you would have found the same thing.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's in every industry. I totally agree.
I'm not trying to, like, stand around and, like, stick up for, you know, like, I play in the hunting industry considerably. I'm not sitting around trying to, like, be their advocate and mouthpiece or something, but I'm just saying I feel like it's just you found out some shit about life.
Yeah, it'd be unjust to say this is just specific to this.
No. I agree. It's in life in general. But I was so stuck in that realm. Like, that's what I was surrounded with.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I understand. I understand where you're coming from, man.
Yeah.
But now, you do want to come and, like, you're ready to talk again. But you want to talk to new people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind talking to. I'll talk to anybody. I'll talk to a wall. It don't bother me any.
I'll get you a certain amount of trouble in some quarters.
I mean, like, speaking is like what drives me. But like, I want to get out of that scene. Because I was so saturated in the whole hunting industry realm. Like, I didn't know anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So like now I'm just like, okay, well, I it's time for me to, you know, venture out and do more stuff.
Yeah, what industry are you working in right now? Like, you just went, like, during your detox, you just went and worked in a completely unrelated world.
Yeah, no, I'd like, from my detox, like, I went from, so, like, I went, like, this is how, like, crazy it was. I went from, you know, driven in a hunting industry. Like, I finished, like, I think last spring I did, like, a turkey tour. I do a turkey tour every year. So I did that, and, like, after I finished that, like, I got back home and was like, all right, cool. I love hunting. I'm happy hunting, but I don't want to stick in this realm anymore. Like, it's just like, it's not what makes me happy anymore. Like, it took a lot of the passion away from me.
Yeah.
So I left there and I worked at a freaking car dealership, like completely opposite of anything.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get into the field of the real world and get out of, you know, this saturation that I've been in for so long. So I did that. From there, it was the worst job I've ever had. Like, that was way worse than anything I ever did with hunting entry. It's terrible. So if anybody ever wants to buy a car, do not call me. So
you were trying to sell cars?
No. I wasn't a salesman. I was a BDC is what it's called. So like, I would be the person to get people in to buy cars. It was more like a
let me come, you like this? Let me introduce you to our top sales guy.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I even grew the hair out. Like, I had the whole car salesman look.
Well, a car salesman has longer hair?
Well, I mean, you know the slick back, like the 1980 car salesman with like the old suit, like the slick back hair, like too much grease. Yeah, that was me. I grew my hair out and everything. Like, it was terrible. I was going through some rough times back then.
Hey, can I ask where, so was your dad, right? Because he's this houndsman. Those are very dedicated people. Was he supportive of you? Was he like proud of you, you know, quote unquote, making a name for yourself in hunting? Was he kind of like, I don't really know about that side of hunting?
No, I think my family's was supportive about it. I mean, I honestly was, and I'm still one of those guys. If I want to do something, I'm just gonna do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like they didn't have a particular say so on me just packing my bags up and going hunting, going travel across the world. I mean,
yeah,
like I would literally leave my house one day and I'd come back 2 months later. I mean, it's just, that's the decision that I wanted to make in life, you know? And that's what, I was so focused on being successful and accomplishing things that I sacrificed a lot. I mean, I sacrificed a lot of time. I think I went 3-4 years without being home for Christmas or Thanksgiving. Like, I never saw my family because I was always on the road trying to be in that next level of success.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I they were supportive in that fact that, you know, I was driven enough to do that.
But you're thinking now about, now that you kind of dusted off, You're thinking now about going back out in the world to talk to people again.
Yeah. I mean, that's my passion. Like, I think, you know, everybody has a gift, and my gift is to, I'm a good people pleaser. Like, bad situations, good situations. Like, I can figure out ways to make a situation be viewed from a different aspect. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think that's what really drives me. That's what I'm really passionate about.
So what's the, like, what if you go to talk to people and you have an audience in front of you, what's the takeaway? Like, the takeaway of your talk isn't that you're a people pleaser.
No. So I think it's more about overcoming life. You know, everybody's faced with challenges and obstacles in life. You know, it's either you fight through it or you give up. And, you know, I was at that point where I wanted to give up many times, and I never did it because I knew that if I kept pushing through, I kept fighting, like, it would eventually get better. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to get better. And once it gets better, you know, better gets to phenomenal. And I want to be at a phenomenal level in my life. You know, and there's, like, a lot of people that struggle with things on a daily basis. Everybody struggles with something on a daily basis. So if I can get someone to figure a way to understand that what they're going through is not something that they have to go through or have to stay in that situation, like, that is what, like, I want to present. I mean, because, like I said, we are only here to deal with bad issues for a moment in our lives. It's not going to take over our lives, you know? So being able to present a different side and a different outlook on life to someone is what I want to present to people. I've had people that have been in way worse situations than I have, and they have failed to understand that life's not over. You know, you could still move on no matter how dark your days are. I mean, like, with after every storm and sunshine, I mean, there's something better for you in life. You just have to understand that it's out there. You have to keep wanting it.
You know, I think about when you bring that up is just having been always just like, you know, just like blessed and lucky, right? Not you, but me. I just, you know, like, I don't know, just lucky. And sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and my kids will come down and all three of our kids will be coming to bed with me and my wife, you know. And instead of thinking like you're saying, like, I want things to get better and better and then phenomenal, I think like, how could this perfection continue? Like, there's no way, like, something bad has to happen. Like how could one get so lucky? And I think to have, probably there, if there's a blessing to having just like such a major setback like you had, it would probably be to get some reality there.
Yeah.
You know, like, what I remember one time being down in Florida and we're like on the beach, me and my wife are on the beach, we're on family vacation. We only had two kids at the time. The kids are playing. They're like helping each other do somersaults. And she's like, things are so perfect. It makes me feel like something bad's coming.
And did something bad happen?
No.
Well, there you go.
Oh, well, you know what we didn't know at that time was we had firmly agreed that two kids was more than enough, and we didn't know that, it's funny, that story in particular, is we didn't know that at that moment she was pregnant with our third, which was like kicked to the nuts. But in the end, it was like, you know, like everybody says, like, such a blessing, right? And it is. I mean, it's amazing. But at the time, so when she's, that's what we laughed about later. It's like, oh yeah, something bad was going to happen. Another kid.
This is kind of backpedaling to what Cal asked about your dad, how your dad felt about you kind of getting so deep in the industry. But I kind of wanted to know, you say that you don't really remember what kind of guilt your dad was carrying, like, shortly after the accident. 10 years pass after the accident, then you start to kind of make a living and gain nationwide, worldwide attention from not only your calls, but also retelling the story of being shot by your dad. And I mean, you'd think that after 10 years, there's probably a lot of healing happening, like, between just like with the guilt he was carrying, maybe that. And then all of a sudden, it just, like, was it like a wound opening back up for him that you were touring the country telling this story?
Which is over and over him, again. Reminding
do you
again.
Think there was any, like, obviously he was probably proud of you for getting up there and becoming a speaker, and but
Yeah, he's, after a while, I'd be like, enough already about that. Yeah.
I mean, do you think there was any resentment at all?
You know, it's kind of one of those deals. It's like, hey, Dad, you remember that time you shot me?
Yeah.
Here's a video on it. You're going to watch this here. No, it's
set
not
to
like
very
that.
Sad piano music.
Yeah. Like, very depressing. And then, like, okay, yeah, give me your credit card. Like, I want to buy a new truck. Like, it's the, I don't guilt trip anybody. It's a bit, you know,
is your dad okay?
Oh, yeah. My dad's fine.
You guys close?
We don't turkey hunt together anymore.
But you still communicate with them?
Yeah. But, you know, they like say we don't turkey hunt together. I mean, it's a different subject for a different day.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, for as far as, you know, opening that wound, I don't think – I think it's healed. I honestly think it's healed. But being able to show that it didn't hinder me in life, I think that that's something that has helped him heal. I think it's helped, you know, me and my whole family heal from the situation. Because, I mean, I don't look at my accident as it was something devastating. Like, I'm grateful for it. You know, it would not have made
no
me
shit,
the person.
Really?
Yeah. It would have, it would not have made me the person that I am right now if it didn't happen. I mean, there's no telling what I would have been doing or, you know, what kind of guy I would have been if my accident never happened. Like, it humbled me so much. Because, like I said, you know, we take things for granted all the time. Like, I could have been a selfish prick if I never got my legs taken away from me.
Sure, man.
But like, now, like, I cherish the little things. Like, I'm grateful for so much more now. So, like, I don't think my accident was one of those deals where, you know, I should get bitter over it. I mean, I think it's one of those things that really humbled me in life.
You could have been the type of dude who wouldn't have thrown a roadkill deer in the back of the truck in the rain. You know,
that's never going to happen again. Just to let you know.
So if people want, as much as you're wanting to do this, if people want to contact you, to talk about having you come and talk to a group, or how do they do it? How do they get a hold of you?
I think the easiest way to get a hold of me is I have a Facebook page. It's called Son of the South. S-O-N of the South. And I think that's probably the easiest way to message me. I used to stay on social media a lot, but I've laid back on that pretty much. But
if people wanted to send you a message, they could still find you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not hard to find. Just look for a black guy in a wheelchair making animal sounds. Not hard to find at all.
The group narrows down pretty quick.
All right, man, this has been great. Josh Carney, Son of the South.
That's it. Sometimes I get called Mouth of the South. Don't know why. Probably because I talk a lot.
I like it.
Yeah. You know.
We'll stick with Son of the South for now,
please.
Though.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on, man. And yeah, now that you told everybody how to find you, if you want to learn more about Josh, go track him down. Thank you very much.
Thank you.